Yeah, I'm Sal Buscema, and I have no idea what I'm doing here.
Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of Third Degree Burn. I'm your host, Kirk Greenfield, and I'm joined by an interesting collection of our panelists. We're going to go alphabetically here. We're joined by Tim Elliott.
Hello.
And Brian Hughes.
I'm not that interesting.
And all the way from Japan, Nigel Spink.
Hello there.
And tonight we have a special show for you because of the tragic news that has been shared recently of the passing of Sal Buscema. So we're typically a John Byrne discussion group. And by doing some research, somebody has come across an example of the collaboration between the two artists. And we're going to be talking about that and perhaps some other issues tonight. So this is sort of a discussion slash tribute to Sal Buscema and sharing some of our thoughts. Who wants to lead off?
Well, let's do a little round robin here. Everybody, we'll start with you, Brian. When did you first kind of either discover Sal Buscema or were aware of him?
Well, I actually started picking up comics as a collector when I was about 10 years old in 76. I remember I was picking up like Marvel Team Up because it was a Spider-Man book, and I was picking up like every Spider-Man book. And they had one with the Invisible Woman or Invisible Girl back then. And it was actually like the Invisible Girl and Franklin Richards. And I really liked the art in there. And it turned out that was Sal Buscema. And that was, I think, the first time I'd seen anything that he had done. But when I was sitting there looking back on him, I was thinking it was going to be Spectacular Spider-Man or something in that realm. But it turned out this was it. And I appreciated it because it was a very good, faithful, to Spider-Man kind of story. And it also gave us, I think, gave me my first glimpse of Gene DeWolf. Who was a favorite character of mine until they killed her off. Thank you, Peter David. Rest in peace. But, the thing is, that wasn't the one that really sold me, though. What really sold me was an issue of What If that John had done, and that was issue 44, What If Captain America Were Revived Today. And every now and then, I'll pop out a Why Do I Read Comics on Facebook? And I'll always post this page as one of those reasons. And it's a big splash page that shows the Steve Rogers, Captain America, Spider-Man, and Sam Wilson swinging down towards the fake Captain America and Bucky. And it is just such a powerful image, especially the way that the ersatz Captain America looks in the background. It's very powerful. And that's my favorite image that Sal had ever done. I liked his early stuff a lot, and his later stuff kind of fell off a little bit to me, but there's reasons for that, and we can talk about that later.
I was going to suggest that we will do our best to share if we have individual panels or pages or covers that illustrate our point. We'll try to share that on the Facebook page.
I couldn't go without mentioning those right there. Who's next?
Kirk, you want to?
Well, I have a confession to make. As the old man in the room here, I go back to Jack Kirby and Stan in the Fantastic Four as my initial entry into Marvel Comics, and started picking up the Avengers about issue 55, 56, when they did a flashback to, Bucky is really dead. And so I started collecting the Avengers and kept going all the way through issue 100 of the Avengers before I stopped, paused to go to college. And someplace in there, the artist changed, and I wasn't that attuned to artists. So what I'm leading to is somebody named John Buscema was doing artwork, and somebody named Sal Buscema was doing artwork. And I didn't really recognize their style or their artwork. So I don't have a real clear image in my head saying, oh, this is when Sal took over. I just have this long ongoing, I don't want to say association, but a long recognition or image of the Avengers as they evolved from where the Vision came on board all the way through, about 101, 102 when I departed, stopped collecting. And someplace in there, except for the Kree-Skrull War, Sal Buscema was doing the artwork, doing the chores. And so in my head, that's what comes to mind when I think of Sal Buscema, but I am by no means well-versed in his career or his artwork. I just recognize the name and that he was part of the bullpen back in the day, and I don't, I haven't tracked it. How about you, Nigel?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was going to say the first time I can recall seeing Sal's art, it was either a Hulk story or, but I think it was probably the Avengers. So similar to what you've just been saying. And the earliest one I can think of that was Sal's artwork on Avengers was issue 68, which was the third and final part of the Ultron 6 story, where he first becomes, where he's first made out of adamantium.
Right.
I think Barry Windsor-Smith did the first two parts, and but Sal did the finale. Right. And I really liked his artwork there. And as I say, then there was, it's probably the Hulk stuff that I saw a lot of. When he, because he had a long run on Hulk, so it was probably early 70s Hulk, and also, of course, going further back, it wasn't Sal's pencils, but it was Sal's inks on John Buscema's inks on Silver Surfer 4, and I think that's absolutely fabulous.
You know, that was his second job altogether at Marvel. He did one issue of Rawhide Kid, and then he started.
I'm going to say he did a Western, and that's great. That and that's well, his inking.
His brother had, I guess, when Buscema was or John was first starting out, his Sal, who's his younger brother, was would ink his pages, wasn't for Marvel, some other company. But when he got into Silver Surfer, he didn't like the way. And I can't remember who was inking him. John thought he was they were overpowering his pencils, so he asked for his brother, who was familiar with inking his work. And that's apparently that collaboration really worked out.
That was Joe Sinnott that was inking him on the previous issues.
I was going to say they were good too. But yeah, if he felt he was being overpowered by Joe. Yeah.
Well, of all the Silver Surfer issues in that first 18-issue run, I remember number 4 with Thor, spectacular cover, and everybody seems to point to that one as being, you know, just a superb high watermark for Marvel Comics. And even when they reprinted it in a title called Fantasy Masterpieces Volume 2, second use of that umbrella title, I didn't even notice that they had trimmed out 2 pages. But I, you know, it's the cheaper way to find it, but you know, because they need. They needed to shorten it because they needed ad pages because of the economics at that time. 2 pages went, and I didn't even notice. I'm embarrassed to say. Tim?
Well, for me, I think I'd heard of Sal Buscema, and I'd probably had seen his artwork. It just didn't click that I was recognizing his. It wasn't until I really was aware of him doing work. Is on his long run on Spectacular Spider-Man. But before that, obviously this Hulk annual we kind of mentioned was in there. And that's kind of his later day style. I think he got overshadowed a lot by his brother. And he was always like the other Buscema, you know, because John was there first and he was very prominent with his work. And he had a very distinct style. And maybe I couldn't pick out Sal's style until he kind of refined it to what it was in the latter, I guess, the later half of his career. He had a very kind of a, because I know he tended to ink his own pencils. So that's probably why his style was so distinct because nobody was in there changing it. But he had a very, it was almost like Simonson. Well, Simonson tends to ink not with a brush, but with a pen. So he has a very, you don't get that thickness variation you do with a brush. So with Simonson, it's very a lot of straight lines, and it looks like it's done like with a kind of a quill pen. And I think Buscema looks, I don't know what he does, but it looks like he's kind of doing the same effect. So some of the lines are a little thinner and a little more font refined. But he tends to, if you've noticed this, he likes to do outlines. if he's got a dark background, he'll outline, he'll have like a white outline around the figure, I guess, to set him off. But I think from just reading up on him, I think something that, that rarely gets talked too much about when we talk about artists is we get focused on the actual drawing themselves. Does this look accurate? Does it look cool? Does it look right? You know, if they get the body proportions right or whatever they're doing. And we forget about, well, it's also about storytelling. So you could be a great artist, but maybe you're not good at storytelling. And I think Buscema had a reputation for being a great storyteller, the way he laid out the pages and the way he, you know, conveyed the story so that you wouldn't necessarily need the dialogue to understand what's going on. But yes, Spectacular Spider-Man is my introduction, kind of my introduction to him, where I realized he was on there for, I think, 8 years. So I got very used to his style. We did Tinkers on the Hulk.
What's interesting is sitting there looking at him and his brother side by side. You know how many pages Sal did in his career, penciling and inking? Was looking at Mike's Amazing World, 18,894. Mm. And John did, let's see, stories. And it is not just going there. Here we go. 18,154. So Sal beat him by about 700, 750. But he did live longer than than John did. But that,
That's pages, you say?
Yeah, that's pages.
Yeah, because I got some figures here, but they were for actual comics or what they call works.
Yeah,
yeah, it looks like works. John did 843 books and Sal did like 933.
He was very prolific. I think he did most, and he did most, almost all of it was with Marvel. He worked for DC for a little bit.
It's mostly Marvel.
Kirk, you were asking the issues. Spectacular Spider-Man, he did 134 through 226.
What about the beginning?
He did the beginning of that too, but I think this, they're counting
one,
just...
He stopped at issue 20.
Yeah,
he did from one up to, into the 20s, because I've got those.
He did so much of ROM.
Oh, ROM, yeah.
Yeah, but I think he probably did more Hulk than anything.
Yeah, he was on that, I think, for 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
And he defined the image of the Hulk there, though he did, you know, he did... evolved the Hulk's look, because the early look of the Hulk in that Hulk smash reign realm was one look, more of a square jawed Hulk. And then as he got closer to issue 300, you could see the Hulk becoming more bestial. That was after Secret Wars.
That was into the 80s.
But he got more bestial there. And you saw in the later issues that he did, he had almost like an ape-like facial appearance on his Hulk.
Well, I heard they used his design of the Hulk as the reference for the Mego Hulk figure.
Yeah, and that would have been the early Hulk that he did.
Yeah.
I was going to say, when you start talking about people drawing the Hulk and changing his appearance slightly, as I recall, the very first Hulk annual, which was a battle with the Inhumans. I think Marie Severin was the artist on the inside, but has a great classic Steranko cover. The point of this is, in that great first annual, there is a one page devoted to just headshots of all the different artists who have done the Hulk to that point. So they had one from Jack Kirby, one from John Buscema, one from, I mean, I won't go through the whole list, but it was like maybe a dozen headshots that were sprinkled on this page and saying, can you guess which is which? Boy, as a fan of Marvel Comics and having had purchase a lot of those, I was maybe not able to say, oh, that one is Sal or this one is John, but I was able to say, oh, that's the Jack Kirby original. Oh, this is Marie Severin. Well, that leaves who's left. It was very educational to me, and if I can find that, I will try to share it with you, because I never worried about it as a kid, but then as I got older and started recognizing styles, this, you know, that sort of a feature page showing a single character under different artists, it just looking at the head, it evoked the time period of the book that I had been buying or that I had read. So it would give me the flavor I go, oh, I do know who that artist is because I remember that story where this headshot came from. I'll try to share that.
Well, his style did change so much from, if you look at his early stuff to, and I don't know if that's due to maybe he's trying to do a house style versus when he, when, you know, the later half, you know, from Spectacular Spider-Man and on, he had a very distinct style.
I was not always a fan of that, and it always came back to the mouth on the characters because it was either closed mouth or wide open with a
grimace,
like something going down the middle. No,
the
it's
saliva.
Like
the saliva. Saliva
going down. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, it grated on me. But it's, you know, the thing is that aside from maybe Gil Kane, there are very few artists out there that had anatomy down as well as Sal did. You know, during most of that time. And that's part of what made him, you know, so reliable is that you always knew you're going to get solid anatomy from him.
And he also did the frozen breath thing as well, going back to
vapor,
mouths.
Like
a little white zigzag coming out to show that it was cold. Yeah. And he was the only one who ever did that. But.
And he was master of the side eye glance too.
Well, he did a lot of when I was kind of researching images for our artwork for the show, he did a lot of his punches. It was a lot of like behind, you know, you're looking at the good guy is punching the bad guy and he's from behind and he's just swinging a full swing of the fist and then big explosion. And the other guy's getting, or it's reversed. They're coming at the camera.
Doing a
bad you just didn't know on the next page, was it going to be a quarter page, half page or full page? Oh man. I mean, did you guys have any particular stuff? I mean, obviously, you know, he did a lot of Hulk work. And I know that the one that we're talking about, was early on, and I'm trying to remember which one that was. Oh yeah, the double-sized annual 14, and that of course being, you know, written by John Byrne, and in this case Sal not only penciled but inked the issue. And this is definitely, you know, post Secret Wars Hulk. You can tell by the shape of the face and the mouth and all that.
Well, it said it takes place between pages 7 and 8 in Hulk 314, which is when Byrne was working on them.
Byrne's first one, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So 314 was right when he came back.
Yeah, I had to look that up as well, because when I saw that, when it says takes place between two pages, I thought, what? So I went and got my 314 out again, because I thought, I can't remember.
Well, that's where he's jumping home. He's jumping home and lands at the beginning of that. It's when he kills the deer accidentally.
Yeah. And then, of course, he leaps off and this little kid's watching him. And then the flying craft that's in the annual comes over. And it says, I think there's a little footnote there saying, if you want to know more about what this is, see the, you know, annual 14.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always wondered that afterwards. I thought, yeah, they never did go back to say anything about that flying craft that just appeared in one or two panels. And I never read the annual originally, so I never did know where that came from. But yeah, it all worked. Yeah, it fits in.
Yeah, because all the nicely. All the characters other than the Hulk are new.
Yeah.
And yeah. So there's no continuity there other than the Hulk. So he jumps
into starting for it. Yeah. Yeah. And then you turn over to page 8 and of course it starts with Leonard Samson. So it's like, yeah, okay, that's feasible. Yeah. Time's moved on.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Wasn't that the, maybe we discussed this. Wasn't that the idea behind Spider-Man? Is it not the Hidden Years? That's X-Men. Spider-Man Chapter 1, is that what it's called? That Byrne did? It was supposed was it supposed to take place in between panels?
Well,
the original.
I mean,
some of it maybe.
It did take place between things, but there was also the way the issue structure was done. So that, you know, an issue would be the end of the Amazing Spider-Man issue, you know, 4 in the beginning of issue 5. And so you're getting your issues of chapter 1 in between all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was an interesting trick of this storytelling there. I'm still trying to find something else here in Sal to reconcile his version of the Hulk to see when he really got that look on him. And I'm wondering if it was before 300.
I know he gap while you're searching for something here. Go ahead, Tim.
When he first started out, he did not want to be a penciler. He wanted to be an inker, and he kind of was forced to pencil because that's what he had to do. So I think he really liked inking more than he did actual drawing.
But he just got dragged into the inking. I mean, the penciling.
Penciling, yeah.
Because he was so good. Not enough to get paid as well as John, apparently, because John was the one that was paid more than anybody else at Marvel by contract. Really? Yeah, that was a point of contention with Byrne, because when Byrne got his first contract, big contract, Shooter told him, yeah, you're the highest paid artist at Marvel, except John Buscema, because he gets paid more than anybody.
That's what he contracted, right?
Yeah.
Well, when I think of the name John Buscema, I think of Conan.
Avengers Conan. Silver Surfer, I always think.
Good. Yeah. That fixes it in my head. I know what you're describing.
But I like, Sal's artwork was consistent and clear. It wasn't always that spectacular, but it was good. Whenever I saw a book, even if it was one I didn't get on a regular basis, and I'd always look, who's the artist? And if it was Sal, when I opened it up, if it was Sal, I usually thought, oh, this is going to be okay then, and I'd buy it. Yeah. And I liked his artwork on Defenders. When I started getting Defenders.
That's funny because I thought of the Submariner, the Sensational Submariner series, where they did a prototype, if you'll forgive the expression, of the Defenders, someplace around issue 32, 33. I don't have it off the top of my head, but there's a reveal of the Avengers versus the Defenders, the Avengers perhaps on a rocky bluff standing above.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know which one you mean. Yeah.
Boom. It popped into my head. It's like, I'll bet you that's him. I'll bet you that's why I like that issue.
Yeah. I think that's when the Defenders were Submariner and Silver Surfer and maybe Hulk. There was only a few of them then, weren't there?
Yes. And the concept had not been published under the name Defenders.
Yeah.
I think whoever wrote it, probably Roy Thomas, was experimenting, was saying, gee, I can put these heroes together, make it work. Let me show you. And so, he was dropping seeds, and somebody at Marvel above him, I guess, ultimately nodded and said, yeah, I guess that does work. You want to try it in Marvel? What was it? Marvel feature? One, two. Yeah, this is selling enough. We'll go with Defenders. And that's as far as I went. I didn't go for the ride with Defenders.
I used to like Defenders.
But just where my tastes and my age, I just circumvented it. I got the first two, but I was dropping out of comics at that point, going off to college.
The first ones didn't. The ones where it was only Doctor Strange, Namor, and Hulk, I wasn't too excited about, because I think I did read those early stories in some way. I really started collecting Defenders a bit after that, when the team had also got Nighthawk and what's his name?
Starhawk. I'm blanking.
You
have create Starhawk.
I think you're right. Nighthawk.
I thought it was Nighthawk. Kyle Richmond, yeah. And Valkyrie,
Silver Surfer.
Although Surfer came in and out, didn't he? Popped in and out, depending on when they needed him. Yeah. And Doctor Strange and Hulk. And then, of course, they started putting in lots of other heroes who'd come along for the odd story or so, like Power Man and Daredevil, Son of Satan. They kept bobbing in and out, but they had this core four members, maybe Doctor Strange and Nighthawk, Valkyrie, Hulk. Yeah, and then later, Hellcat, etc. Yeah, but I enjoyed those stories.
Don't forget the
and
elf
the
elf
with the gun.
Jeez.
And some of those stories were, some of those stories were a bit wacky because it was Steve Gerber, weren't it? But yeah. I liked Sal's artwork on all those Defenders. Yeah,
he did a lot of Captain America too. Not that I was reading it back then, but he did a lot of Cap.
He did a fair amount. I've got some of those more recently. The ones from about 146 through 150 odd.
Ironically, that's just about when I left Captain America, right in that time period too. I don't know. I'm not trying to say that his artwork turned me off. I'm just saying other things in my life were drawing me away from comics, and I wasn't getting the Jack Kirby, Stan Lee thrill. And we were years away from the John Byrne resurgence that was revitalizing everything. So, I know the range that you're talking about of those issues, and I can remember some of the stories or some of the artwork. And in hindsight, I'm nodding going, that if you tell me that was Saul, I'll accept that.
Well, he took over, and I guess I never made the connection. He took over for McLeod on early in the New Mutants and did, number of issues. And I guess his style, or maybe he was trying to ape McLeod's style. I never clicked that this was, a different artist.
Mm-hmm. How early? They ran till about issue
four. I think he started at four or five.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't think he did it much. My memory of the New Mutants is when
Sienkiewicz.
No, that run too. But I was collecting those kind of as back issues.
That was the end of my New Mutants when he took over.
Brett Blevins, who had a very almost cartoony style.
He
I liked
chased
it.
Me away, but it was also Louise Simonson's writing that chased me away.
Really?
New Mutants.
Was it Warlock and Cypher and all that nonsense?
It was when they killed Cypher. It was after they killed Cypher, it just went downhill from there.
He brought in Bird Brain.
I forgot.
When did Louise Simonson start writing New Mutants?
Late 30s, early 40s, I think.
Yeah.
I was gone long before that then.
Yeah, it was after that great run where you had, Claremont was still writing, and you had Jackson Gweiss and Kyle Baker doing the inks, which I just felt was one of the greatest parts of the New Mutants there.
Yeah, I think what they did was, and I'm kind of looking through these New Mutants now, McLeod stayed on and did a lot of the covers. So even though he wasn't doing the interior art, he was doing the covers, so it looked like it was being done. If you just glanced at him, it looks like it was done by the same artist if you weren't actually opening it up and looking at it.
Yeah, so. I've told you guys something that I stumbled on just recently about the New Mutants, didn't I? I'll repeat it very briefly as a tangent. I couldn't figure out why in the world they would make such a radical change with issue 16. It just didn't make sense to me why 16. It didn't feel like a convenient break point. And then I found out that the New Mutants graphic novel, which is how they originally appeared, was actually three solo issues that were combined together. So it's not issue 16. It's issue 18, a year and a half contract for things change. And the light bulb went on when I read that and went, I got it now. It makes perfect sense.
But I thought the big change came from issue 18, not 16.
Yes. Well,
that was when Sienkiewicz took over, weren't it? Around about 18.
And that's a Demon Bear story.
Yeah, that's Danny. That bit.
It still was quite a shock.
I was getting New Mutants right from graphic novel and then number one right up to 17. And then when it changed from 80, I thought, ah, this is awful. That was it. Finished.
I'm wrong. Hey, Tim, when you edit this, just take my whole comment. This last, just no. Take it right out.
Yeah.
Warts and I'm all, you get it. Comes. You get it all.
Yeah.
Well, that demon bear, we're off topic here, but that demon bear story, I think, is what they based the movie.
Yeah.
That came out a couple years ago on.
Yeah.
St. Kevitz is an acquired taste, you know.
Yeah. You could say that.
He's more, I think he's almost good. He's more for like standalone pieces, like a cover or a poster or something, as opposed to an entire, although I did like, didn't he do is he the one that did the Havoc and Wolverine story, Meltdown?
I think that was John Bolton.
Is it? Okay.
It was pretty bizarre.
Yeah, he did the Daredevil.
Elektra, right?
Yeah. Well, no, he did the graphic novel Love and War.
Okay.
Which is Daredevil Kingpin story that Frank Miller wrote.
Yeah.
And then he did Elektra Assassin, with Frank Miller.
With that's what I'm thinking about, right.
Huge guns.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I remember those. I couldn't get into it. I admit Sienkiewicz drawing or the bizarre artwork that he used in the New Mutants grew on me. And when I went back and reread it, I thought some of it was cute. Some of it was clever. I won't say that I enjoyed it as it was coming out because it was such a shock and so bizarre. But I could see some sense of humor behind there and some I could see where it was going with it. And
it's not as bad as that Jay Lee transition from John Byrne and Namor. Remember that, Kirk, when we covered those issues?
Oh yes, I remember.
Yeah. I think it's on a par with that.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, there are, and that's a lot of times. You know, they used to do that. They would have the artist that's coming onto a book would kind of ape the previous artist and kind of transition you in. They don't do that now. It's just a dead stop. But so sometimes you'd be reading a book. I remember that on Thor when Buscema took over for Walt Simonson on Thor.
Yes.
And it was a couple issues before I realized, wait a minute, this is not the same artist.
But I really loved those issues. That he did something there that I think only John Byrne had done before, and that was one whole issue of all splash pages.
Is that when he fights the Midgard serpent?
Yeah, and Thor was in, of course, that super armor. I forget what they called it, but really enjoyed that.
Yeah. That's where he dies, and then he goes into the Destroyer, doesn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
And but Thor also wound up in the Mutant Massacre.
Yeah.
During that time, and Thor goes down into the sewers, and using his lightning, basically cleans up all the dead Morlocks.
That's how he breaks his arm, isn't it? Because he'd been cursed by Hela.
Yes. Hela. Mm-hmm.
So he broke his arm. It's why he wore that. I think Tony made him a cast that he wore like a robotic arm. Yeah,
and scars on his face. That's why he grows a beard.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
I remember this time period.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't figure out where they were taking that.
Well, it's like,
but it was all Sal. And I mean, Sal just wasn't the guy that you called out about. And they didn't announce when he was taking over a book, and they didn't they didn't give him any ballyhoo.
No, all right. It was very workmanlike. He was very. Yeah. Got the job done. It wasn't a lot of hoopla, as you said, Brian.
Yeah. So, reliable old Sal.
But I don't think he ever fussed or argued about it or anything. There was nothing that said that he, spoke up or had any dissatisfaction.
No, I think he enjoyed it.
And he, was always, as I understand it, he was, good guy at conventions when he did show up. But, I mean, I never saw him, never met him. I never met John either.
No. Yeah, they may have not strayed far from New York, maybe.
Well, wasn't it one of the two Buscema brothers who made a statement or just didn't like drawing superhero figures?
Yeah,
John.
And so he really bloomed on Conan. But I don't, when I saw his, when I saw his superhero work, I couldn't tell that he didn't like it. I mean, he seemed to be adequate and enjoying it and illustrating well. And so I, it was a big shock when I read that he didn't like doing that. It's like, but you do it so well.
I always thought.
I thought that too when I read the same thing, because I've got a book about his artwork where they do an interview with him and he said he didn't like doing the superheroes. And I thought, oh, it kind of disappointed me for a while because I thought, but your artwork's so great. And just to think that you don't actually like doing this as you're doing it. So he really sort of managed to put that dislike to one side. He didn't, let it affect his work.
Yeah,
he didn't phone it in.
Yeah, he did the best he could.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and when you're putting potatoes on the table for your family,
you will do
a lot of things that you don't particularly enjoy.
He said
enjoy.
That Thor was probably the only one of the superheroes that he enjoyed, like, because when you got those stories in Asgard and what have you, it was a bit like medieval stories, you know, so he could get into that because it's like with Conan and all the other sword and sorcery stuff.
Well, Buscema's artwork, I mean, Kirby aside, because he's kind of in his own different level, Buscema to me has the quintessential look of what you think a comic book artist would be. It's not super realistic, but it's not cartoony, but it's done just stylized enough with a lot of action. And I love I can always tell Buscema by the way he draws feet and shoes, his boots. That's the giveaway for me. It's like Gil Kane and the up the nose shot that you can always tell.
Yeah.
Gil Kane's another one, not to get off topic too. He's another one, I think, that doesn't get enough fanfare. He's just a workman kind of guy, and he's like respected, but you don't hear a lot of people praising his work. And I've become a real Gil Kane fan later. You know, I've always liked his work, but I've really become a fan of his, unfortunately, after he's passed. I never got a chance to meet him.
Well, did you guys have any favorite books? I mean, I've mentioned the ones that are kind of, you know, meaningful to me, especially that What If with Captain America. But were there any that were treasured ones or anything like that? And it doesn't have to be. It's, you know, it's not like we're taking a shot at him or anything, but I'm just curious.
I'm thinking the first two issues of what became the Kree-Skrull War before Neil Adams took over. I think there's like two issues of Captain Marvel being pursued by government forces and/or the Avengers.
Yeah.
There's one or two right there that is kind of a sweet spot, and I'm not sure why. As I mentioned, the Defenders prototype appearance in the Submariner, those come to mind, but there's not something really dramatic like the birth of Franklin Richards or the death of Gwen Stacy. There's no key issue that stands out for me. As you say, he was a workman and he did his job and he got it on time, and his artwork didn't stand out, and there were no key decisions or key changes that occurred that I remember under his watch. So that's the best I can do.
For me, it'd probably be, again, I don't have a particular issue, but it's the storyline in Spectacular where they introduced Tombstone before he became the villain Tombstone. He was just a leg breaker, and then he becomes Tombstone. Those kind of stand out to me because that was when I was reading that book monthly. And they brought him into that new animated series that was on HBO, I believe. They brought in Tombstone, and I wouldn't be surprised if they don't bring him into either the I don't know if he'll be in the latest or the new Spider-Man movie that's coming out.
Well, I want to kind of point you back towards a couple issues. Now, when I was a kid running down to the U-Totem, they didn't, obviously they had Avengers, but the Avengers were in like the 170s to 200 era. So you got some George Perez or Byrne or whatever. But they also were running Marvel Super Action, which was a reprint of the Avengers from the early days around the Kree-Skrull and all that. And they did a reprint of two issues in a row, 71 and 72. And both those were penciled by Sal Buscema. And 71 had the current new Avengers. And it was like Yellow Jacket, Black Panther, and Vision fighting again. They got thrown back in time and they were fighting the invaders. Captain America, Submariner, and the Human Torch, the android. And it was a really, really good story. And there was Kang and the Grandmaster, backstory that was going on at the time. And I think they just finished a battle with the Squadron Supreme or Squadron Sinister as they were there.
That's right.
And they had a really cool, I want to say, like, full page poster of the Avengers doing Avengers Assemble. And they had the Black Knight and the Wasp and Goliath. And I remember it was so funny because you'd see like Thor and Cap and the Black Knight and Wasp, and everybody's got a big smile on their face. And then there's Vision. It was like up at the top corner. And it looks like he's yelling like the rest of them, but no, he ain't happy. And then like the next issue was I guess, the close up to the Scorpio storyline. And didn't that turn out to be like Nick Fury's brother? Did I just, oh, I'm sorry, spoilers. But I mean, those are both Sal Buscema issues, and they had as much flair and action and cool imagery as anything John did.
They were. I remember all those too. Yeah, I would have mentioned the Avengers that period as well.
You're right. You're right, Brian.
And
They
as
had
I
a lot
said,
of that stuff. But when I got that, I think one of them I got from a Whitman sampler. I'll have to look. But
What?
it would have been a it would have been the Marvel Super Action or whatever the reprint was. It wasn't the actual issue, because that came out like 10 years earlier.
What's a Whitman sampler?
That would be a three pack of comics that you could pick up at grocery store or roadside Stuckies or anywhere
Drugstores, I
we were
think.
traveling. And it would have three comic books in it for like 99 cents. And the fact of the matter is, as far as guides go, Whitmans are their own category of books. You've got your Marvel, you've got your newsstand and your what do you call it? There was
Direct
newsstand, and then
market.
there was black, well, retail,
Yeah, direct market.
newsstand, retail, and then if it was sold by Whitman, it some of them actually had a little Whitman stamp in the top left.
And I think they're for value wise, I think they're the same as the first run. They're a first run anyway, but I think they're valued the same, about the same.
It sometimes varies. It does vary. By the way, there's a new app out there. I don't know if you guys have seen it. Is it Comic Geek that my son wants me to get onto my phone? That you can scan a book with the app and it will tell you the current value in the various grades. And you can actually, if you sign up for their service, which is like $30 a year, you can start building up scanning your collection, and they'll keep a record of it. If you want to make it available to sell to other people, you can do that too. We ought to, see if they want us to advertise them and get paid for it.
I think what I use is Comic Collectors. They also have that they have books, and they have it for books and movies and everything. But if you pay, I don't pay for the subscription anymore, so I have to hand key my stuff. But yeah, you can take a picture of your, at least for entering it into your database. You can just take a photo and it'll put all the information in for you.
I was using another service, but it wasn't as good. So I'm sitting there looking at doing that. Christopher's offered to start cataloging my collection again. He's supposed to do it 5 years ago and didn't. So we'll see how this goes.
Sounds like a government job.
We'll see. Anyway, does anybody have anything else they want to bring up on Sal?
Just reminiscing about other issues that kind of remember. As I say, I collected the Defenders when he was doing that, and like two of my favorite stories. There were 2 4-part stories actually. There was one between issues 22 and 25, I think, where they fought against the Sons of the Serpent, and there were a lot of guest star superheroes in that one. I think that's where there was Luke Cage in that one, and Daredevil and Demon Hellstrom, as well as all the usual Defender guys. So there were lots of characters in that one. And then the one that actually followed that, which was another four-parter, where they went to help the Guardians of the Galaxy. They went to the future to help them to try and overpower the Badoon who had taken over the Earth. Yeah.
Ooh la la, Badoon.
Yeah.
Oh, so that was an X-Men story.
And though, yeah, those two stories were yeah, really good. I really remember those well. And they were, Sal did the artwork on those. And then various different Marvel team-ups that I remember with Spider-Man and that Sal was on the art chores for. Yeah. He did a lot of good stuff, really. And to me, Sal was to Marvel in the 70s, probably like what Jack Kirby was to Marvel in the 60s. I mean, their styles are not the same or anything, but with
There's a
regard
little
to,
mention it could.
to with regard to the different titles and the work that they did on them, he worked on quite a lot of different titles, and he had his what you call regular ones, of course. The Hulk being one of them, Defenders another one, Marvel Team Up, Captain America,
I love.
oh, and of course Peter Parker Spectacular
Yeah.
from 76, yeah. And then, of course, into the 80s, Rom. Rom was like his main one. And he even did an issue of X-Men. He did X-Men 66.
Yeah, I think that's the last issue before they went into
Yeah,
reprints. Yeah.
before they went, yeah. He did the final one of X-Men before they went to reprints. And he also did the cover of 64.
Yep.
Yeah.
A busy man.
Yeah. He did a lot of good stuff. And then even later in his career, when he was inking, he worked a long time, yeah. When he was inking Spider-Man, Spider-Girl,
Yeah.
I've got those A-Next. I think he did some of the A-Next, not all of them. He did some Thunderstrike inking.
I mean, he was doing work up until 2019.
Yeah.
So he
Yeah.
That's what Mike's Amazing World says. They did what Thor the Worthy, the Beta Ray Bill stuff. But
Yeah.
is that really the last thing he did?
Well, maybe for Marvel, I don't know. Maybe he's doing stuff
Yeah.
that was not. He probably did. Like again, I don't know how prevalent he was at
I think he
conventions.
did some I think he did some stuff with Ron Frenz as well, which was
Yeah.
not for Marvel or DC. And that was only a couple of years or so ago.
Yeah, but I mean that would mean he was okay. If he died, he's 89. He worked up to about 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, he was working up until he was
Yeah.
almost 80.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
Just like
pretty time.
John was working into his 80s too.
Yeah. That's impressive. And like I said, he tended to be a kind of loyal to Marvel. He stayed with them. And I don't think it's just because he enjoyed it or just, I think he just kind of went to work. He said he got faster. At first, he was incredibly slow, but once he kind of hit his groove, he could do two or three pages a day, just pretty quick.
Looking at Burn Robotics, they've got a section there devoted to, just it's, one of the subjects devoted to Sal, and they've done over 7 pages of people talking about Sal's career.
Well, he's the like I said when I think I posted in our chat that we are quickly losing all our Silver Age and even Bronze Age guys that there aren't, I don't think there's many. I don't know. He was probably the last of the, he really didn't start in the Silver Age, but I mean, who is still around that worked on books in the 60s? I mean, Romita's gone.
Like Roy Thomas.
True. Roy Thomas is still around.
Yeah, I think he's it.
Yeah, because I don't think there's any of the, yeah, I
Did
can't,
Sal
top of my
do an
head.
issue of Did Sal do an issue of Alpha Flight or several? On Burn Robotics, I'm looking at a sequence where Wolverine is first discovering he has metal claws with Heather, and it's Sal art. I just don't remember what it came from.
No, I'm sorry. Alpha Flight ends with issue 29. There's nothing beyond that.
This is probably before that.
Yeah.
There were a couple
Crazy. But yeah, I don't know what or when that happened. I mean, when that was printed out, I just saw that on there and I was quite surprised. I was just trying to see if Byrne had anything to say. Well, here's one thing. John Byrne said, one of the high points of my 50 plus years in comics was learning that the Hulk annual we did together was among Sal's favorite jobs.
Really?
Yeah, I read that.
Well, apparently the Hulk was his
Amazing.
favorite character, so he enjoyed working on that book.
Oof. And Byrne 75, so
Well,
just gotta hope he can.
if we're at the end of this discussion, we should probably tell folks where they can reach us. Ryan, do you want to suggest how they can contact us?
Facebook, Discord, don't worry about email. And don't worry about iTunes either. Facebook and Discord, though, we got that third degree burn group. You can talk to us every single day there. All right. But if you got to email, it's got to get burned at gmail.com. And we are on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes, but we got to get our feed fixed up. And so that's
Yeah, and
on the
that's,
books. But I got to get some free time, which I'm about to get free time. So we'll see. Maybe I can do something there.
Okay. Well, I want to thank the panel here. We'll go around alphabetically. Thank you, Tim Elliott, Brian Hughes, and Nigel Spink. And if no one else has anything else to share, I've been Kirk Greenfield, and we'll see you next episode. Good night.
Should be up at the top right.
No, it's okay. I'm in something else and I can't get out. Gonna have to pull it out. Still can't get out. Oh, sh.
Dr. David Banner, physician, scientist, searching for a way to tap into the hidden strengths that all humans have. Then an accidental overdose of gamma radiation alters his body chemistry. And now when David Banner grows angry or outraged, a startling metamorphosis occurs.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.